David Pogue is back on the show today. You've heard him with me many times. He is the founder of Yahoo Tech, the former tech writer for the New York Times, writes a monthly column for Scientific American, contributes to CBS Sunday Morning, does science shows for PBS's Nova, and has more Twitter followers than I can ever dream of. Last year, he wrote a book called Pogue's Basics Tech, the basic concept of which was when you buy something like an iPhone, you don't get a manual. So you got to figure out a lot of stuff about how to use it and hear from other people about, oh, here's a cute little tip you need to know. That book sold enough that the publisher said, do another one. And David apparently said, well, I don't want to do it just as a tech book because I have a lot of tips about life. And so now he's out with the new book, Pogue's Basics, Life, Essential Tips and Shortcuts for Simplifying Your Day. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. That was a perfectly described setup.
Thank you. These are not life hacks, right?
I mean, they are life hacks. My problem with that term is that life hacks have gotten a bad name on the internet. Like, so many of them just don't work, or they're absurd that, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, life hacks, those stupid things. Like, you know, make a piece of pizza, leftover pizza crisp again by putting it in the microwave with a glass of water. No, that will make it mushier, not crisper. You know, anyway, there are thousands of these things that go around, but I'm happy to say that everything in this book has been tested by me.
And I mentioned that you've got a lot of Twitter followers, something like 1.5 million of them. Many of them contributed some of the things that you include in the book, right?
That's true. Almost everybody's got a life tip or two that they've accumulated. So I sent out a call and offered free books in exchange for cool tips.
Okay, now let's get into a few of these that are in here. And you broke it down into sections where there's the car, the kitchen, etc. Let's start in the car with winter here is a nagging problem, and that is fog inside the car. Not frost on the outside, but fog on the inside.
Yeah, so the science of this is really interesting. And the punchline is that it's the opposite of what you'd think. The punchline is make it colder in the car, because what's happening is the outside of the car is cold and dry, the air, and the air on the inside where you are is warm and moist because you're breathing. So that fog is condensation from your breath. So what you want to do is, first of all, don't recirculate the air if you have that recirculate button on your dashboard. Bring in outside air. You can even open the windows. And two, turn on the air conditioning. And everyone's like, but it's winter, that's absurd. Yes, I know. But the idea is to equalize the temperature inside and out to make the fog go away.
So we're air conditioning our car in the winter. Can we at least turn the heat up?
You can. You can do that simultaneously. But if you want the fog to go away, you don't blast warm air on it. That won't do anything.
All right. The next thing that's car related is something that has been a pet peeve of mine for a long time. I travel quite a bit, and when I travel, I usually rent a car, and at some point, I have to refill the gas tank on that rental car, and when I pull in, I assume that the gas tank is on the left, but for some reason, there are insane car manufacturers who put it on the right side. Now, you have a tip in here that will help me learn what that is, and I'll let you tell that in a second, but first, why hasn't this become standardized yet?
Isn't that weird? There are some things that are standardized in this life and some things that aren't.
You know, the steering wheel is on the left and the glove compartment is on the right, unless you go to England where it's reversed. But in the United States of America and Canada and most of the civilized world, we drive on a certain way with the steering wheel on the left. Why isn't the gas tank always on the same side?
You and I, man, we'll start a movement.
So how do I know which side is on because the crazy people aren't a part of our movement yet?
On your dashboard, on the fuel gauge, where that little E to F thing, is a tiny picture of a gas pump with an arrow pointing either to the left or to the right. Check your car. It's there. And that is telling you which side of your car the gas tank lid is on. And you probably know where your own car's gas tank is, but this is how you know if it's a rental car or a borrowed car.
Yeah. By the way, there's another thing about this that drives me crazy, because just over the last couple of months, I've rented cars probably 3 or 4 different times, and you never know how to unlatch the gas tank from inside the car.
I know. That's another thing they should standardize.
Yes.
That'll be our second movement.
I can't tell you how long I've spent looking for the thing and then finally gotten out in frustration and thought, well, I'll just pry it open, and they already have a little notch there for you to pull it open. Or on one car, you actually pushed the door in and it popped open. But I'm so used to looking for the latch opener inside the car. We got to get that fixed, David.
You know, they have these stickers on the little the visor that says, you know, danger, don't put somebody in the passenger seat, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Why don't they have an equally, even more important sticker that says, here's where to find the gas lid latch?
Yeah. Rental car companies could do us save us a lot of trouble if they would actually put labels on, here are the lights, here is the gas tank thing. Here's the trunk opening button. Oh,
absolutely.
All right. While we're talking about travel, I did not know until I read your book that I could save more money on hotels with my phone than with my laptop.
This is true. If you have a smartphone and you need to book a hotel within a few days, you will find that if you use a hotel app or a hotel booking website, that your price will be much lower, like 50, 60 bucks a night lower, if you use your smartphone to book it instead of using your laptop. And the reason is that hotels are desperate to book their unrented rooms, of course. So they'd like to get any money they can for it, and they're targeting, you know, business people, mobile people, millennials, spontaneous people who are moving around, the type who might have a smartphone. And so they offer them much juicier prices than the laptop folks.
Now, is that only if you go to the website for that particular hotel, or would it work for something like Priceline?
No, it's for, you know, hotels.com and hipmunk.com. It's for the not the hotel's website, but although that as well.
All right, let's move into the kitchen now. I recently was having lunch with a friend who pointed out to me that the ketchup bottle on our table, you know, the upside-down Heinz bottle, is now painted. Did you know this?
So that it always looks full?
Yes.
That's disgusting.
Apparently, the reason they do it is because people didn't want to see half-empty or two-thirds empty bottles with that little liquidy mucilage kind of thing that forms on the top of the ketchup when it's upside down. And so Heinz said, fine, we'll now paint them. Now, I don't know if this is on consumer bottles. I checked the one in my pantry, and it's not painted. But apparently this is a new trend in restaurant ketchup bottles.
Well, then how are you supposed to know how much ketchup is left in there?
There's no way to know.
Now they'll start putting gas gauges on ketchup bottles.
And then you have to have an indicator that tells you where the opening is.
It's the circle of life.
Yeah. But you've got a ketchup bottle hack in the book.
Yeah, and this one will even help you out in that painted bottle situation. So this is a really great way to get the ketchup out of a bottle, and it's particularly useful if there's just a little bit left at the bottom. We all know that's the hardest to get out. This works on both glass and plastic bottles. Painted and unpainted, you make sure the cap is on tightly. You hold the bottle from the bottom and whip it around your body. You're going to use centrifugal force, basically, in a big arc, in a big circle. And it is incredible. Just one time, one whip, and it makes all the ketchup fly off the bottom into the neck so it's ready to pour.
Nice.
It'll change your life. I always say that if this book only changes one thing in your life, then it was a really bad book.
And, of course, that's only for the non-squeeze bottles.
No, that's for all bottles. The squeeze bottles are equally frustrating if there's ketchup at the bottom, like a half an inch of ketchup near the bottom. So those work equally well with this technique.
Oh, I like it. Okay, now the next one, when I read this in your book, I was actually a little bit upset because it means my wife was right and I was wrong.
Sorry about that.
We've been together for over 32 years, David, and I have always told her, put the butter back in the refrigerator. And you say, no, you don't have to.
You don't have to. There's a huge advantage to leaving the butter out, which, by the way, is what they do in Europe, and that is that the butter is always soft and spreadable. So when you want to spread it on bread, it spreads, whereas if it's cold and hard, it won't. And I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking, oh, well, it's a dairy product, therefore it has to be refrigerated.
Yeah.
Actually, it does not have to be refrigerated. Even the USDA website confirms this. It'll stay good for a number of weeks sitting out on the counter. And the reason is that bacteria can't multiply without moisture, without some water. And butter is over 99% pure fat. There's just nowhere for bacteria to multiply, and the tiny micro droplets of water that are in there are separated from each other. So the bacteria can't get in to multiply, so it's fine.
I can't leave it out forever.
No, they're saying 4 or 5 weeks, and it's also suggested that you get one of those covers for it,
mm-hmm.
so the exposure to, you know, kitchen odors and light and stuff doesn't bother it. But that's another one that changed my habits when I learned that. I now leave it out, and I'm so much happier.
Another thing I learned from your book that will change my eating habits, or at least the way I attack the food that I shove into my mouth, you're telling me I've been peeling bananas wrong my entire life.
This is true. I mean, this is, you know, a first world problem to be sure, but bananas have that natural stem, and that's what most people use to start peeling the banana. The thing about that stem is that that's where the stringy parts start growing. So if you peel from the stem end, A, you reveal the strings, B, you frequently mush the first bite as
yep.
as you peel it. So the true banana cognoscenti peel the banana from the other end. You might think of it as the bottom, but bananas actually grow in clumps upside down. So the little black crusty end, that's actually the top. So if you peel it from, if you pinch that to split it and then peel that, you don't mush the banana, you don't get strings, and you can use that stem part as a handle.
Did you learn this going to the zoo with your kids?
No. In fact, that's one of those dumb life hacks that people send around online. They say that this is how monkeys open bananas. But I actually researched this. I went to YouTube and watched a lot of videos of monkeys opening bananas. That is not how they open bananas. They just rip the thing open, like from the side, from the top, from the bottom, however they can get into it. So it's people who should use the black part as the opening.
There's no delicate monkey banana etiquette? Which, by the way, is the name of a great punk band.
Punk monkey etiquette. I love it.
All right. The book is called Pogue's Basics, Life, and it is great tips and tricks that you need to know to get through your life. I mentioned that it was the follow-up to David's tech book, but it also has some tech stuff in it, or tech-related stuff, and I want to touch on a couple of those. One of which, again, I was on vacation just a few weeks ago on a nice beach vacation. Had my iPad with me, was trying to read it, had my sunglasses on, couldn't read the iPad. What was going on there?
Yeah, the iPad screen is polarized, so it interacts with polarized sunglasses. So you will see pure black if you look at an upright iPad through sunglasses,
yeah.
Polarized sunglasses. The cool thing is that if you turn the iPad 90 degrees so that it's landscape orientation, suddenly you can see through it. The image returns because, of course, polarized glasses only block light and block the glare in one direction.
You're supposed to say, Paul, really, you were at the beach with the Atlantic Ocean out there in front of you and you still had to look at tech?
No, because you and I are cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, we are. Now, here's another thing that I've had a problem with, which you saved me with this book, and that is when your phone doesn't make the best internet connection. What do you do?
Yeah, a lot of times your phone struggles with the Wi-Fi connection. Even if it looks like it has a lot of bars, it can still look like it's having trouble getting online. And so in those cases, what you're supposed to do, believe it or not, is turn off the Wi-Fi. And what that does is it forces your phone to drop back onto the cellular network, which frequently has a better connection than the Wi-Fi did.
But how do you know you're on the best cellular connection?
I don't think you can help that. It's supposed to pick up whichever is the best tower.
Well, sometimes I see that I've got a 3G connection, but I've got 5 bars, and I want to be on LTE because I know that's faster.
Right. I mean, you can go in there and turn off LTE, and that'll force the phone to drop back onto the slower network, but usually LTE is the best there is.
Okay. Now, another tech thing I've got to ask you about, this is kind of book and website related for you, both Pogue's Basics Life and also Yahoo Tech. As you know, Apple is considering getting rid of the headphone jack in future iterations of the iPhone and I guess probably in the iPad as well. They want to use the Lightning plug instead, which means that I can't be charging my device and listening to it at the same time. How frustrated are you by the multiple number of adapters and plugs and jacks that we need in order to get through just a simple tech day?
Well, I actually have some huge news about that. And, I mean, yes, I'm super hyper-frustrated, and so is the world. And you wouldn't think companies would have any interest in fixing it because they make money by selling these proprietary connectors and adapters. But this consortium of Apple and Google and Microsoft and Intel and 200 other companies have spent the last 3 years coming up with, if you can believe it, a universal charging cable that will work on any brand of any phone, tablet, laptop.
Wow.
An interchangeable one. It's called USB Type-C or USB-C. And this is what comes on all the new stuff from Apple and Google and Microsoft, like the Google Chromebooks have USB-C, the 12-inch MacBook from Apple, all the new phones and tablets from Microsoft and Google. And what's cool about USB-C is not only is it tiny, but it's reversible, like you can't stick it in the wrong way. And it's the same end for end, so you can't grab the wrong end. And it works on any model, any brand. So that's going to be rolling out in the next couple of years. So for once in technology's life, I won't mind going through a transition to a new kind of adapter, because then it'll just be the one forever. Now, it is true that the headphone jack on the inside of the phone is one of the bulkiest components you've got. That's what's keeping phones from getting thinner, is the inside of a standard headphone jack. So that's why these companies are interested in getting rid of it. USB-C headphones will be common in most of the world. If Apple had any brains, they would use USB-C headphones instead of their own Lightning connector. So it remains to be seen if Apple will get with the program on that.
They're not part of that consortium?
They are. They are, and they're using USB-C on the new laptops. I suspect they must be tossing and turning at night, wondering, should they stick with their own proprietary Lightning connector, or should they go with the entire rest of industry and switch to USB-C?
All right. Well, speaking of Apple products, you have a tip in here for how to use Siri to check your text messages while you're driving.
Oh, this is great. This will save lives right here. So Siri has tons of commands that she understands that most people don't even suspect. So you're driving along, your phone dings telling you of a text message. Don't take your eyes off the road. Just hold down the home button and say, read my messages. And she will read them to you one at a time. There is a message from Paul Harris asking, will you be on time? Do you want to reply? And then if you say, you can just say yes. You don't no longer have to touch the phone. You say yes. And she goes, what is your reply? And you say, on my way, be there in 10 minutes. Do you wish to send it? Yes. And that's it. The whole thing hands-free. So the key word is read my messages.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love that one. You also have one in here about text messages and planes, about when you get off the plane.
Yeah. So I learned this in researching the book. So your phone checks periodically to see if you've got new messages. I mean, usually it checks every second. But if it doesn't have a good connection, gradually it tries to save power by not checking as often. It starts checking every 10 seconds, then once a minute, then once every 10 minutes. And eventually it's only checking the network once an hour. So when you land, it might be some time before all your piled up emails and messages come through. It's waiting for the next hour to check. So what you can do, you break the logjam by sending yourself a text message. And what that does is it teaches the phone that you are back on the network. You're back in the cellular zone, and the connection can resume. So you don't have to wait till the next hour for it to check.
Does that also make it automatically check your mail and check for voicemail, et cetera?
Yep, that's right. Everything will come pouring in at that point. Like all these 11 backed up text messages will suddenly flood in when you do that.
All right, I don't want to go through all of these. We wouldn't have time because you've got hundreds of them in the book, so maybe we're approaching a dozen or so here, but I do want to touch on a couple more. One of them is a tip for our listeners who have to shave on a regular basis. I don't. I've had a beard my entire adult life, so I'm a trimmer, not a shaver. But for people who do need a clean face every day, you know, the razor and razor blades concept is bankrupting them.
Yes, it is. The shaving industrial complex milks us for hundreds of dollars a year. I hope that this broadcast gets a lot of listeners, because this one's going to revolutionize any man's life who shaves. So we all know that your razor blade gets dull really quickly, like those cartridges or whatever. I mean, really, just after a couple of shaves, it's no longer as sharp as it once was. And then, I mean, very quickly they're dull and you have to throw them away. The reason is not that you're wearing it down. You probably assume, oh, it's the friction of running up against my wiry, manly stubble that's dulling that blade. No, that is not the case. What is dulling the blade is rust, oxidation on a microscopic scale. If you looked at that thing under a microscope, you'd see that the leading edge of each blade is actually oxidizing. It's rusting from you get it wet every day, and then you expose it to air, and it starts to rust in a tiny way. So very simple fix. Make sure it's completely dry after you use it. Some people use a blow dryer. I keep a little baby food bottle full of rubbing alcohol. You dip it in there, swish it around, and rubbing alcohol evaporates like instantly, leaving the blades dry. You can get like 4 or 5 months out of a cartridge if you're willing to do that. And I am doing so at this moment. I'm in like month 4 of the same cartridge. It is awesome.
Wow. That's a great one. That's a great one.
Science.
What is vampire power?
Vampire power, that's all the electricity that's being sucked down by things that are left plugged in and charging all the time when you're not using it. There's not a ton you can do about it, although there are some fancy surge suppressors now that detect when something is charged and cut the power, or at least measure how much stuff is how much electricity.
So are you saying, like, I have an iPhone cord plugged in next to my bed, and when I come home at night, I plug it into my phone, but the rest of the day, it's using power?
Yeah, that's right. And your TV and your stereo and printers and scanners, all these things remain in standby mode in case you want to suddenly use it.
Right.
And it's unbelievable. I mean, your TV cable box alone eats $18 a year, sucking down power. And if you have a TiVo or another video recorder, that's $35 just sitting there. $10 billion a year Americans are paying in vampire power.
But I'm not going to start turning off the house when I leave.
I know. Well, there are some power strips that at least have a sort of master-slave arrangement, so that when you turn off, like, the TV, all the other things, like your sound system and your Blu-ray player, turn off also.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also power strips that you can control from your smartphone. There are strips that you can control the outlets based on the time of day. So there are ways to tackle it. But the main thing is just to be aware of it and start realizing it's costing you real dollars.
I wonder where the win-loss line there is between the cost of buying the new power strips or just paying for the vampire power.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
All right, the last one I've got to ask you about is, you're on TV all the time, so you have to be in shape. I'm in radio. I don't. But I still would like to get rid of this fat hanging off of my belly. I know that Americans are always looking for a magic pill. I know that there's a four-word answer here: eat less, exercise more. But will that actually – is there a way to specifically target this belly fat?
One of the things I tried to achieve in Pogue's Basics Life is to neatly and succinctly and humorously distill the life information, you know, sleep, the latest sleep science, how to be happy, the latest happiness research. And this is one of them. You cannot target belly fat. Sad but true. You cannot spot weight loss. You can't. Women tend to gather excess weight around their hips. Men gather it on their belly. That's the way we've evolved. That's it. So if you want to lose belly fat, study after study after study show the only way to do it is to lose weight overall. It will evaporate along with the rest of your fat.
You also say in the book, speaking of sleep, stop checking your phones and your tablets right before you go to bed, because that blue light actually serves as a stimulant.
That is true. That's also been shown through a lot of research. The bluish tint from your screens disrupt the melatonin production in your brain, the sleep chemical. There was one study that said people who check their tablets or laptops or phones before bed, on average, sleep 23 minutes less a night than they would otherwise.
Now, of all of the things you have in the book, I'm going to bet that that's one that you do not pay attention to. You can't be the head of Yahoo Tech and be plugged into everything without checking right before you go to sleep to see if anything happened in the world.
You're right. I mean, I have no trouble sleeping anyway, so that one doesn't bother me. But yeah, I can't go to bed without one last check.
The book is called Pogue's Basics, Life, Essential Tips and Shortcuts That No One Bothers to Tell You for Simplifying Your Day. David Pogue, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.